Chapter 39. In resuming my battle for temperance, I again studied the best works on the subject, from the learned naturalist Pliny to the celebrated Sir Astley Cooper. I compiled a multitude of scientific notes, arguments, and facts from these books, and prepared a manual of temperance, which was so great a success that it went through 4 editions of 25,000 copies in less than 4 years. But my best source of information and wisdom was from letters received from Father Matthew and my personal interviews with him when he visited the United States. I never lectured on temperance in any place without first inquiring from the most reliable sources about 1. The number of deaths and accidents caused by drunkenness the last 15 or 20 years. 2. The number of orphans and widows made by drunkenness. 3. The number of rich families ruined and the number of poor families made poorer. And 4. The approximate sum of money spent by the people for alcohol during the last 20 years. Our merciful God had visibly blessed the work and his unprofitable servant. In the first parish of Longueuil, 2,300 citizens enrolled under the banners of temperance. Instead of inviting them to sign any written pledge, I asked them to come to the foot of the altar and kiss the crucifix I was holding, given to me and blessed by the Pope. During the next 4 years, I gave 1,800 public addresses in 200 parishes with the same fruits and enrolled more than 200,000 people under the banners of temperance. Everywhere the taverns and distilleries and breweries were shut and their owners forced to take other trades to make a living. Not on account of any stringent law, but because the whole people had ceased drinking their beverages. After having been fully persuaded that they were injurious to their bodies, opposed to their happiness, and ruinous to their souls. The convictions were so unanimous in many places that the last evening I spent in their midst, the merchants would make a pyramid of all their barrels of rum, beer, wine, and brandy in the public squares, and I was invited to set them on fire, while the husbands and wives, the parents and children of the redeemed drunkards rent the air with their cries of joy at the destruction of their enemy, and the fire was in full blaze. One of the merchants would give me an axe to stave in the last barrel of rum. After the last drop was emptied, I usually stood on it to address some parting words to the people. The only thing which marred that joy were the exaggerated honors and unmerited praises with which I was really overwhelmed. I was at first forced to receive an ovation from the curates and people of Longueuil, which filled me with confusion, for I felt so keenly that I did not deserve such honors. But it was still worse at the end of May 1849. Judge Mondulet was deputed by the bishop and the priests of the city of Montreal, accompanied by 15,000 people, to present me with a gold medal and a gift of $400. But the greatest surprise came at the end of June 1850, when I was deputed by 40,000 teetotalers to present a petition to the Parliament of Toronto to make the rum sellers responsible for the ravages caused to the families of the poor drunkards to whom they had sold their poisonous drugs. The House of Commons kindly appointed a committee of 10 members to help me to frame that bill, which passed easily through the 3 branches. I was present when that bill became law, giving the innocent victims of the drunken father or husband an indemnity from the land sharks who were fattening on their poverty and unspeakable miseries. When in May 1850, Archbishop Turgeon of Quebec sent the Reverend Charles Bellegon, curate of Quebec, to Rome to become his successor, he advised him to come to Longueuil and get a letter from me, which he might present to the Pope with a volume of my temperance manual. I complied with his request and wrote to the Pope. Some months later, I received the following lines, dated Rome, August the 10th, 1850. Reverend Mr. Chenecky, sir and dear friend, Monday the 12th was the first opportunity given me to have a private audience with the Sovereign Pontiff. I presented him your book with your letter, which he received with all special marks of satisfaction and approbation, while charging me to state to you that he accords his apostolic benediction to you and to the holy work of temperance you preach. I consider myself happy to have had to offer on your behalf to the Vicar of Jesus Christ a book which, after it had done so much good to my countrymen, had been able to draw from his venerable lips such solemn words of approbation of the Temperance Society and of blessings on those who are its apostles. And it is also for my heart a very sweet pleasure to transmit them to you. Your friend Charles Bellegon, priest. A short time after I received that letter from Rome, Bishop Bourget of Montreal had officially given me the title of Apostle of Temperance in the following document. Ignatius Bourget, by the divine mercy and grace of the Holy Apostolic See, Bishop of Montreal. To all who inspect the present letters, we make known and certify that the Venerable Charles Chenecky, Apostle of Temperance, priest of our diocese, is very well known to us, and we regard him as approved to lead a praiseworthy life and one agreeable to his ecclesiastical profession. Through the tender mercies of our God, he is under no ecclesiastical censures, at least which have come to our knowledge. We entreat each and all, Archbishop, Bishop, and other dignitaries of the Church, to whom it may happen that he may go, that they, for the love of Christ, entertain him kindly and courteously, and as often as they may be asked by him, permit him to celebrate the holy sacrifice of the Mass, and exercise other ecclesiastical privileges of piety, being ourselves ready to grant him these and other greater privileges. In proof of this, we have ordered the present letters to be prepared under our sign and seal, and with superscription of our secretary, in our palace of the Blessed James, in the year 1850, on the sixth day of the month of June. Ignatius, Bishop of Marianopolis, by order of the most illustrious and most reverend Bishop of Marianopolis, D.D., J. O. Parr, Canon, Secretary. No words from my pen can give an idea of the distress and shame I felt at these unmerited praises and public honors. For when my natural pride was near to deceive me, there was my conscience crying with a louder voice, Chenecky, thou art a sinner, unworthy of such praise and honors. Another serious anxiety for me was the large sums of money constantly flowing from the hands of my too kind and grateful reformed countrymen into mine. Those sums would have soon made me one of the richest men of Canada. But I confess that when in the presence of God, I went to the bottom of my heart to see if it were strong enough to carry such a glittering weight, and found it far too weak. When only 18 years old, my venerable and dear benefactor, the Reverend Mr. Lebrohan, director of the College of Nicolet, had told me a thing I never had forgotten. "Chinnicky," he said, "I am sure you will be what we call a successful man in the world. It is probable that you will have many opportunities of becoming rich. But when the silver and gold flows into your hands, do not pile and keep it. For if you set your affection on it, you will be miserable in this world and damned in the next. Give it while you are living. Then you will be blessed by God and man, and you will be blessed by your own conscience. You will lie in peace and die in joy." Those solemn warnings from one of the wisest and best friends God had ever given me was never gone out of my mind. I found them corroborated in every page of the Bible, which I loved and studied every day. I found them also written by God in my heart. I then, on my knees, took the resolution, without making an absolute vow of it, to keep only what I needed for my daily support, and give the rest to the poor or some Christian or patriotic project. I kept my promise. The money given me by Parliament did not remain 3 weeks in my hands. I never put a cent in Canada in the vaults of any bank, and when I left for Illinois in the fall of 1851, instead of taking with me a fortune, which I could have had so easily, I had hardly $1,500 in hand, the price of a part of my library, which was too heavy to be carried so far away.